Okay, good evening. Welcome to the April 3rd track meeting. We're starting. I just want to know if anybody has public comment. No public comment. Okay, so next we're going for the approval of the minutes. Has everybody read the, let's start with the December minutes. Has anybody read them?
Lorraine, this is Valerie. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I thought I read in the minutes that the assignments of folks, I didn't see DC folks. It seemed to say in the minutes for December that Valerie Cook was from Maryland and Yvette Washington was from Maryland. I think there was just some misalignment of, because I'm pretty sure I'm from DC.
Okay.
Am I making sense?
Let's you do have Valerie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I will fix that. Thank you for
sorry.
And you have Will as Washington. Okay. Has everybody read the December minutes? No problem with them?
Motion to approve.
Okay, so we're ready to vote. Are we accepting the minutes as they are? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
I'm abstaining. I was not present, so we have two abstentions.
Three
abstentions. Andrew, Rob. And myself. Okay. Now let's go for the approval of the March 6th meeting. Everybody read them? They look okay to you? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Anybody
aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, unanimous. Okay, so the next thing we have on the agenda is did we approve the agenda as is? We never did that. I'm sorry.
I think we approve the agenda as stands. Second.
Okay, all in favor? Anybody opposed? No? Okay, so we're approving the agenda. So the next step is Blue Yellow Line Platform Reconstruction Project. So welcome to Morgan Basford, Mark Bowman, Jim Hamry, and Jeff Stoll.
Good evening. I'm Jim Hamry. I'm the director of the Office of Bus Planning and Scheduling, and we're taking the lead on preparing the service plan for the summer shutdown, and I'll be talking about the project. Michael Weinberg, our project manager, has joined me at the table, and Mark Morgan and Jeff are behind us to answer any technical questions that come up about communications or the project specifically. And I'm sorry, Mr. Sheehan, this is the exact same presentation you saw on Monday, so you can give me feedback on whether I'm getting better or... Thank you. So we'll go on to the next slide. So this first slide is images of the problem. You can see that these three stations in particular, the edges of the platform have been exposed and are starting to show deterioration, spalling, rusting, and that sort of thing. And that's really the heart of what this is all about. To the next slide. There are 45 outdoor stations currently in the metro system, and those are the platforms that are the target of our efforts of maintenance because they're outdoors, exposed to the weather, de-icing, freeze and thawing, and have suffered through the most deterioration. To the next slide. And so, as any of you know, the first outdoor platforms went into service in 1976, and the ones that we're talking about went into service in 1977 and a time period shortly thereafter. If you go back one, John. And so we've already done 10 stations. 15 of the platforms are in good condition, and that we've got 20 in the system that need attention. And we will be working over the course of the next 3 years or so to finish all of them. And this is the first of the project improvement program that we're implementing this summer. Now you can go to the next slide. And the construction approach involves actual closure of the railroad in that section of the community. And the reasons are that it reduces the project length by having more intensive work. It minimizes the service disruptions because we can maintain regular scheduled service from National Airport north and east, and not have to do the reduced frequencies due to single tracking and those sorts of service complexities. The contractors are obviously more efficient when they have 24-hour access and they can just set up and keep going. They don't have to clean up for revenue service. And the time period was selected because the summer is the lower ridership time period for Metrorail traditionally, and granted, there are more tourists in the area, but more of our regular commuters are on vacation and alternative work schedules. And so the intent was to find a way to minimize the impact on the minimum, to have the minimum number of people impacted. Moving on to the next slide. So the project we're here to talk about, beginning May 25th, running through the Labor Day weekend, is for the six stations south of National Airport. And that's what we'll be referencing as the Platform Improvement Project for Summer 2019. Go on to the next slide. The intent is that all of the what we call invasive work, the work that requires actually impeding the ability of customers to go through the station or for trains to be able to go through the station will be completed during this closure. There will be some residual work being done at several of the stations because there are other things in mezzanines and elsewhere in the station that don't have to be done during the closure time period. And in order to have an effective and safe work environment, may not all get accomplished at the same time. When they reopen, all of the stations should be serviceable by Metrorail. It may not be full service and full access until the end of the project, but service will return to each of these stations. Going on to the next slide. So we have been engaged since almost a year ago in trying to prepare for this. This is sort of unprecedented in the size and scale and geography of impact. At least with SafeTrack, they were small slices of the region, and here we're taking a big slice of the pie. And we've been working cooperatively through Northern Virginia, NVTC, the Northern Virginia Transit Commission, with each of the local jurisdictions, Arlington, Alexandria in particular, and Fairfax. There are over 140 different offices, agencies, and governments involved in this service area. So there's been a lot of meetings, phone calls, and then all of the different elements that go into supporting the services. Using the SafeTrack coordination model, but this is on steroids. We're trying to do everything that we learned during that period and try and do better and focus more on the customer impact and experience. And rather than messaging to stay away for 2 weeks while we clean up our act, this is, we want you to continue to come here, and here's what we're going to do in order to make that viable for you. And on the next slide, we can talk about the ongoing coordination. Let's move on to the next. So the service design, my office with Michael's assistance has been taking the lead on developing the service plan. We looked in depth at the ridership demand. And so what we found in the peak hour and the peak direction, there's about 6,300 people riding through this section of the railroad. And so all of our service plans have been built on how to accommodate that flow of people and recognize that not everyone's going to ride a shuttle bus. They're going to look at alternatives and to make sure those alternatives are prepared to be able to absorb the additional demands. Moving on. So we have basically four major free shuttles that have been designed. The first two I want to talk about are the expresses. We're going to have an express from Franconia to the Pentagon and one from Huntington to the Pentagon. And the reason we're having these express shuttles is to allow people to ride around the city and not have to go through the closure zone. That improves the service to the customer, and it reduces the amount of people that have to be accommodated through congested portions of Old Town and US 1. We've had, over the course of the last 3 years, I think we've run the Franconia shuttle about six times, and the last time we had upwards of 4,000 people a day that were riding it. So it's pretty well known, pretty well received. It gets you to the Pentagon faster than the railroad and for free. It's sort of a no-brainer. So we've been very successful with that, and we're hoping that that same success will extend to the Huntington shuttle, which is going to use the Beltway and the HOV-HOT lanes to get into the Pentagon. And then, as usual, we have a Blue Line replacement shuttle operating locally, Franconia to Van Dorn to King, and a Yellow Line that starts at Huntington and goes each station. There's a twist there, though. The Yellow Line shuttle is going to terminate at Crystal City, going directly from Braddock Road up US 1 to Crystal City. Arlington had recently built a multi-bay bus stop, a bus station under the US 1 bridge on 18th Street. So we're going to use that as our terminus. It has a lot of advantage over Pentagon City, which is crowded with a lot of Pentagon City people, and this allows us to fully utilize that capacity. The Blue Line shuttle is going to operate from King Street and then make a loop through Old Town to serve a few stops there to connect to the business community and residents in that area, and then terminate at National Airport, with the intent being that it provides a direct connection for the hospitality tourist industry in Alexandria to the airport. Furthermore, Alexandria Dash has volunteered to operate that service on our behalf, and they've obtained some additional buses and are staffing up to be able to operate that service, which gives the city added leverage, advantage, and exposure in terms of being able to service their business community and their residents with that service. Metro then will ensure that the Yellow Line operates, and both of those will be 7 days a week. Actually, all four of these will be 7 days a week. On Monday, we confirmed that we will add a fifth express shuttle, and that will begin at Landmark Mall at the transit center there and terminate at the Pentagon. And that will allow us to have all of those private shuttles that are generating about 30 or 40% of the demand at Van Dorn go up to there and get access to the rail at Pentagon, thus avoiding having to transport them through Old Town. So we're very pleased with that. But that's not all. So we slide to the next page. And we're also enhancing the local services that we have in that area. Between ourselves and Dash, there's quite an extensive network of local bus service. And for rush periods, we're going to add additional trips on the 10A line, which comes out of Huntington and makes a loop through Old Town and terminates up at the Pentagon. And then the 11Y, which is our Mount Vernon to D.C. Express line, will also add additional trips to that. In past closures, we've had upwards of a 50% increase in ridership, and so we want to make sure we've got the capacity there. Both of those will be operated by Metrobus. And then in the Metroway, we're modifying that schedule so that all trips will operate all the way down to Braddock Road. There'll be no mid-Glebe Road turnback, and that should provide additional alternatives and capacity for the folks in the Braddock area, North Old Town. But recognizing that travel isn't only about peak periods and commuters, we're adding midday services on our service in the West End, the 21A, on our service in the Fox Hall area and Duke Street, the mid part of Alexandria on the 8Z, and then also running the 11Y in both directions during the midday as an option for tourists to use to get into downtown. It actually goes, right up 14th Street and ends over by the White House. So it's pretty well placed, and hopefully we'll be able to support the hospitality industry and maintain the flow of tourists in both directions. And so we'll also run enhanced service on Metroway during the weekends. Right now the frequency goes down in the weekends, and we're going to maintain a fairly frequent service. All the shuttles will operate the same as Metro Rail hours, and if you can figure out what those are, then you'll know when they're there. So we'll move on to the next slide. There's also additional services being run by the locals. Fairfax Connector is running additional service out of the Franconia area. The Alexandria is running a number of extra services, and also they've modified some parking regulations and starting their trolley earlier to allow folks to be able to take advantage of the water taxi to get across the river. Don't anticipate many will, but they worked out some special prices, and you know, it might be a nice change of pace, and it might be a good plan B should something happen elsewhere in the region. And then OmniRide is and VRE are also doing some modifications of service and adjustments to make their capacity available to folks. And then, as I mentioned on the next slide, the alternatives, we're working with the city and with the Virginia Department of Rail and Public Transport and the local governments to promote park and ride, telecommuting, informal carpools, as well as the formal carpools, all of the travel demand management techniques, again, trying to make sure everybody can get where they need, but if they don't need to get there, then they have alternatives to be able to maintain their lifestyle and activities. The city is also making some traffic signal modifications, and you may have read in the paper the other day, they're going to be considering extending their HOV hours on some of the local streets, and that's to support the extra transit services that we're running. And then on the last, the thing that's, excuse me, really building is the communication. We did some surveys after last summer's closure on the Red Line in the district, and got a lot of good feedback from customers as to what they expected, what they experienced, what they'd like to see. And then our research folks were also able to do some early surveys in the Alexandria community to get some feedback as to what they're interested in seeing, when they want to see it, what formats are helpful, and then we had communications consultants to help us take that information and do something with it. And so I think what you'll see is a very broad-reaching, deeply thought-out program of information to support early decisions, real-time decisions, and to make sure customers are aware of what's happening, since things will happen as we go over 101 days of operation. So on the next slide, you'll see an example, and that is the website has a lot of information, not just about what we're doing, but about what everyone is doing that is around the region, whether it be the Airports Authority or VDOT or local governments. And this is your one-stop shopping for information about your alternatives. They've also developed an alternatives planner, so you tell it where you are and where you want to go, and it gives you the range of options, so you don't have to remember that matrix of options that I just described. Depending on where you are, we're hoping you'll find the right solution and that it won't always be on the shuttle, because I think there are better ways for you to be able to travel. And there are links, and there'll be maps, and there'll be signs at the stations, and all sorts of information. The big thing that we're just going to be going on into, and that's on the next slide, is the customer notification. So one of the things that our customers told us is they like having emails, but what they really like are people they can talk to and ask questions of and get reassurance that they're in the right place and go in the right direction. And so beginning 3 weeks before the closure, we will start having the street teams out at each of the stations, handing out brochures, telling people what's coming, giving them guidance on where to find information. And that'll be supported by customized in-station and signage. We'll have brochures. We'll have train announcements, bus announcements. You'll be seeing press release and lots of press coverage. There'll be press conferences with all of the elected officials to make sure that, similar to what we did for SafeTrack. Even the videos on the 7000 series cars will be updated to show people what their options. So, this is very broad, and it's going to be deep because it's not just for the weeks prior, but it's going to continue throughout the whole operating period. And I think people will be very satisfied with that. And so on the last slide, what this is all about is the customer experience. And so we are going to be having contractors operating buses. There will be some over-the-road coaches on the express shuttles and also in the local shuttles. Metrobus will be operating all the weekday service, but we'll also be operating one of the shuttles during the weekend. We're going to have a lot of training in advance of all of this, so the drivers and the station managers and the station ambassadors that will be there all the time will be informed. They'll be customer-oriented. They'll be ready to answer questions and give advice. And we're really pleased that Alexandria Dash is going to bring all of their local knowledge and local resources to the Blue Line shuttle and all of the stations there, since these are customers that they serve every day. And so the cumulative experience should be one that's very positive, very frequent buses. They shouldn't be very crowded. We've got twice as many buses as we had last summer for the same number of people anticipated. But the overall experience should be one of transit is still a good way to get around. And then as we get to the end of the summer when railroad returns, hopefully there'll be a rush back to continue to use us, and there may be some incentives and things developed over the course of the summer to encourage folks to return to ride the rails, and then we can move on and hopefully not disturb this community for several years to come, because we will have fixed everything that we can fix and prepared everything in advance for for a number of years, and we can go off and go on to the next phase. So with that, I'll stop talking and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you very much for the presentation. Paul.
Thanks for that. Sounds like you put a lot of thought into learning lessons from past shutdowns. That said, I'm curious to know if there are any efforts underway to make people aware of the rail schedule and maintain schedule adherence. In my experience at endpoint stations or at stations that are kind of at the end of a single tracking event, the displays often don't tell you when the next train is coming.
You're talking about the PIDs, the public information.
So is there any effort underway to address that or make schedules of those trains, make the train schedule visible and adhere to that schedule? And I'm thinking at the airport, for example, travelers who aren't necessarily familiar with what's going on are especially going to be in need of useful information and may be highly dependent on a reliable train schedule.
Yeah, and we'll be working with the airport's authority to, inform people that have arrived and hopefully before they even leave their home cities to come to Washington to know what to expect. Lots of information. The good thing about the bus station is it's immediately below the rail station, so it's a very direct connection, a visual cue. The PIDs is the PIDs, and it's going to work the way the PIDs do. I can't promise that the sign will always be accurate, but the good news is that we have had several closures, and we're going to have another one at the first weekend of May to prepare. And so National Airport is a three-track station. There's a center track and two sides, and that allows us to be able to pull in trains and be ready to pull them out. And as I mentioned, that's one of the advantages of actually having the closure there. We can maintain regular service north of there. Now, the usual things will continue to happen. Sick passengers, what was it that happened earlier this week? Some signal outage. Life is what it is. But at least at this location, should be a reliable trains departing north every 4 minutes during peak and every 6 minutes, I guess, the combined blue and yellow during the off-peak. And I think people the rest of the way around the city all the way out to Largo and New Carrollton will be satisfied with that reliability.
And I can just note that beyond managing the summer, part of my role, I manage the shutdowns. I meet every week with the rail department, and essentially we go through a six-week outlook for what's scheduled for. And so we've had opportunities to do practice on these lines, as you I'm sure are aware, but we have seen some of the concerns you've noted that have brought it to the attention to various departments and also have started to focus more on having preparation meetings that happen with everyone from those who inform station managers and train them to develop additional language in the training materials to include these kinds of questions. There are issues, and in addition to that, when we see these types of anomalies, we're doing this testing on the 4th and 5th of May. A big part of that is we're focusing on the local services. There's no expresses running that weekend, so it gives our street supervision staff time to get out there, see how it operates, but also to see what happens. So that has actually been something that's come up. DCA, because of its three-track, where they actually run the train out of affects, also the direction of origin and destination and making sure it's in the right direction, that has been brought to the attention of the rail department. So those types of troubleshooting issues, as we've seen them, have been added to our punch list, and it's these kinds of comments that's a little more firm to that.
Thank you, Lorraine, and thank you all for coming very much. One of the things that struck me thinking about last year's red line shutdown at Rhode Island Avenue is my understanding is a lot of that work, replacing the grout pads, for example, in that area, a lot of it was a redo from SafeTrack Surge 10, I think it was. Could you all talk about what kind of additional quality assurance steps you're taking to, you know, make sure these platforms won't be shut down again and prepared again in 5 years?
Okay, well, just to add a clarifying point, and Jeff can weigh in. This is the last summer we didn't redo the work we'd done before. It was, you know, like we did every third rail tie and we were replacing the others. So it was cumulative benefit. What we're doing for this one, there's a lot of layers. There's additional management structure, lots of support to make sure that the contractor's able to do what we commit them to. And Jeff?
So the contractor is required to put a quality control plan together, which is based off the Corps of Engineers quality control plan, which is very stringent. We have, WMATA has added extra staff through my firm and other firms so that we can cover all this work. So we already started having upper level management meetings every other week to discuss quality, because when this shutdown is over, we want this project to be pristine. Okay.
As best we can. This is several armies of people will be out there, and ourselves included. And, you know, might not get everything, but hopefully that answers your question. Did you have more?
So, additionally, in the documentation that was presented last May 2018 at the WMATA board meeting, and then it's alluded to in our presentation this evening, what kind of station improvements were you all planning? Are you going to be using this for improvements in elevators or escalators? Wasn't really clear from. Yeah.
There will be improvements to the elevators. We're still working on improvements to the escalators. I was actually out at Huntington today to try and figure out how to fix those. That is not included in this scope right now, but we're expanding the scope to include improvements to certain key items like elevators and escalators.
And what you'll see up on the rail platform, the intent is to put in the no-skid tile, like what's up at Fort Totten. You'll also see new wind screens with additional capabilities for future information programs. And our intent is to replace all of the bus stop shelters at these stations at the later part of the project, so that we've removed those old brown shelters and put in the new Franconia-style stainless steel ones. So you should see a notable difference. And then, you know, this is focused mainly on the activity that's going to interrupt revenue services, and there are other projects that will be coming on afterwards that will deal with lighting and additional elevator replacement, escalator replacement, things like that over time.
Maybe just one more thing. Briefly, and you would know this, Mr. Hammer, what's the capacity difference between so the capacity of the shuttles and the additional bus services versus how many people ride blue or yellow?
Well, City Council has been really hard on us about that subject. They've wanted 100% replacement. What we found in other shuttles is that traditionally, you see anywhere between 30 and 50% of your customers go a different way. So we've really been focused on trying to provide shuttle capacity under normal conditions for about 60%. And with the combination of the shuttles and the local service enhancements, we're up to that level. We have, at the behest of the City Council, added what we call surge capacity. Recognizing those first days, especially typically, are a lot, there's a lot more demand than other days. And recognizing that occasionally it rains in Northern Virginia and traffic can go sideways really quick. So we're going to build in that extra capacity. And then lastly, we did the design based on like 3/4 full buses. And so if we go to full buses with standing loads, we technically can get somewhere close to 100% of normal rail demand. And so we think that that puts us in a pretty good position to be able to absorb whatever nature throws at us and continue to provide quality service that is not overcrowded, and it provides a good customer experience.
And a lot of the focus that I was hearing was to transition this platform improvement project so that we have performance measures to track so we go our, you know, our quality assurance that what improvements have been made, and it's not, there's these macro level pieces of the station, which are much bigger, it's a much bigger effort at the station site, the station level. But even down to, you know, the improvements for lighting and for images, so all that is going to be cataloged. So that gives us an opportunity to say, from year to year, you know, if we looked at the red line, the safe track model for Asian, is a platform. Year to year.
And will that be publicly available?
Well, because
there's a strong effort at transparency with this project. There'll be ongoing reports. There'll be a final report. We're even talking about maybe a video and a movie to be released later. My goal is to be on HGTV, you know, the Incredible Machines kind of thing. So there'll be a lot of exposure for this one, because it creates a platform to be able to reassure folks for the next project that we're coming to your town and we're not going to mess it up. Yeah, right.
Okay. No, next, Will.
Okay. Welcome, guys. Jim, good to see you again. Jim is working on the bus transformation project with me, so he's been a familiar face for a few weeks now.
Yeah, I'm sorry for that.
No. No, a couple questions. First is the street team. So I know that, you know, in the past, of course, the teams have been out there. The question I have is, what hours is the plan? I mean, of course, obviously, we target the morning rush hour, but some people, because they are in a rush to get to work, they bypass anybody that's standing there handing out any pamphlet. There's my train. I've got to run. I don't have time. So I didn't know if your plan was to have people in the evening rush hour, teams on the weekends, or any enhancement there. And then the other question is about signage. So I know we've had people come to us before and say that, well, they didn't see signs or the signs weren't placed appropriately. You have information from surveys or people that you've talked to already. Is there anything that you've seen that you've planned to make changes to as far as the signage so that it's, you know, more visible in different locations?
I'm going to invite Morgan to answer your question about the street teams.
So for the street, planning on hitting all of the 6 affected stations, so Braddock Road, Eisenhower, King Street, Van Doren, Huntington, and Franconia, at least 5 times for customer service, for customer notification. So that's the 2 to 3 weeks before the shutdown. So they will be hit at least one morning, one midday, and one night shift, and at least once or twice on the weekends. So we'll be hitting all of the different times to try to get, I know at night, obviously, you have more time, you're leaving work, you don't have to rush to get into the office. So they will be hit at least once during every shift of that. And then during the first 2 weeks of the shutdown, which is the customer service for street teams, the first few days of that, so the first weekend, that Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, we'll have street teams there from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m. all day long. So they'll be able to assist customers in finding their shuttles that are appropriate, the bus routes that are appropriate, and kind of helping them through the process. If they realize this shuttle doesn't work for them, maybe they can try driving to Franconia and taking an express shuttle or something like that. So we're definitely working on how we can best reach all of the customers at different times of the day and get them the information they need. So they'll be seeing street teams a lot more than in the past, probably.
And I would just add that Metrobus will have supervisors and customer ambassadors at the stops all hours of operation. So there will always be some teamwork of a team of people at those locations. Mark, you want to address the signage?
Yeah, good question. Looking at what we do for safety, a couple of corporate signs, the five best people told us complex, not delivered. Yeah, could you just talk to the mic?
Sorry.
It's okay, they're just people.
So we're going to simplify the messaging. We're going to differentiate messaging stations, more station specific. That was feedback from customers. Also separate the alert signage from the actual informational signage. So we'll have signage boards cleared for notification, clear wayfinding signage for hearing closures. And again, that will be station specific, color coded, will be matching up with everything you see on websites on the station specific brochure. So from each station, we'll get a brochure that talks about which option you can take, but how you can report the station. So we're trying to make it more easily understandable, more customizable, and also set up a website that travel.
And for example, we're going to buy 150 A-frame signs for this project. So there's going to be a lot of resources in the location. We designed a bus stop flag specifically for the shuttles and the relocated bus stops for the project, the platform improvement project. So it'll be very clear and obvious with directional information. We've got signs on the buses so you can see that this bus is with us, that bus isn't, so don't get on that one, get on this one. And we got some suggestions from the AAC on Monday, so we will have raised letter plaques and braille information for the bus stop numbers so that folks can use the real-time information. If you have any other ideas, it's not too late, please let us know.
The one other idea that I have, because I know it's the center of our system, is Metro Center. Now, again, a lot of people, of course, they bypass the system and go directly to the Metro Center and then maybe, you know, go home through the Metro system. Do you have, like, specific plans as far as promotion of this movement in the station?
Yeah, so at all of the yellow and blue line stations, we'll have signage going up in the beginning of May. So we're going to cover all of those. That includes Metro Center, Lafont, Gallery Place, like all of the major hubs. So if you are getting on a blue or yellow line shuttle somewhere on the system, you'll be seeing the 7000 series service alerts in the cars, the signage in the station. We're working on figuring out how to not just utilize the screens on the 7000 series cars, but the older cars, how we can put up some type of signage or something inside the actual cars as well. And the kids, the trying to remember. Yes, kiosk information displays, those will also have. You might have seen them up in all of the stations during around like March 5th to 10th, I think they were up. Those will also be utilized again closer to the shutdown for notification as well in all stations on the system.
Again, we'll also have whiteboards available for all the customer service folks to use, which was another suggestion from the AAC on Monday.
So, yeah, if I could, may I? Thank you. This is a thank you, basically. As Jim said, he visited our lovely group on Monday, and we gave you a whole earful of stuff, pages and pages of suggestions. So my thinking is that the disability community has been heard. I think it's going to be well taken care of. And that's great. I think having the any type of live assistance with what's going to be happening when up front is great. And any kind of live assistance helps people with disabilities as much as everybody else. So I think that's great that that's an emphasis. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I would just add for the information of the rest of the committee, in addition to having all of the buses technically ADA accessible with reserved seating for seniors, like on our metro buses, we're going to have what we call ADA accommodation vehicles. Because one of the lessons from last summer is that being technically accessible doesn't mean you can accommodate every mobility device that people bring with them. And so we're going to have vans like the Metro Access vans available to be able to accommodate any mobility device that someone would bring so that we're able to serve the whole population and nobody's left waiting in any amount of time for their for the service.
Okay, so do you guys have any questions? Okay, Valerie or Rebecca, do you have any questions?
This is Rebecca, I have a few questions.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, great. Thank you for this presentation. I do appreciate hearing some of your ideas. They are incorporating some lessons learned from the Red Line safe tracking, which I experienced. I want to say thank you for the alternative trip planner. I think that's really going to be helpful. I want to ask about the street teams and what percentage of the street team workers are bilingual or communicate in more than one language, and what languages the brochures will be provided in. If it's just English and Spanish, that's a little bit concerning. I also did have a question about the size of the shuttle buses, and I appreciate hearing that the vans are going to be incorporated, because one of the things that I witnessed on several nights during the Red Line shutdown was the inability for older people or people with any kind of disability to get on those giant charter buses. It was so difficult, and it really held the process up. It was difficult for the riders, and it was also cumbersome. So I appreciate it, and I was wondering if you could give some sort of, like, numbers on how many smaller shuttles will be available versus the big, giant, mega shuttles that were used at the Red Line. Maybe I misunderstood, and maybe they're not being used again. My final question, actually two parts. One, will folks who are impacted be able to park at the stations that are not using that they're normally using, or are they going to be required to park at other parking lots then take a shuttle to, you know, where they're getting on? And also, will Fort Totten have signage as well? It is, you know, where people transfer to the yellow line there. Thank you, guys. I'm going to go back on mute.
Okay, so to answer the question about bilingual staff first, we will have bilingual staff at all stations at all times. We look at census-driven data to determine the number of riders who go in and speak different languages. So, for example, at King Street, we know there's a higher Amharic-speaking population. So we will have staff who is bilingual in Amharic at that station, as well as Spanish, and Spanish at all of the stations. The brochures will be done in English and Spanish. We're currently talking with jurisdictional partners to see if there are any additional languages they would like brochures developed in. We will have language on the brochures where people can call the phone number to get additional assistance in their preferred language.
And I just want to add, for the Fort Totten question, we will have signage at Fort Totten.
During the shuttle, Yellow Line will actually be going there. So there, you know, nothing is ever static. On the issue of the buses at peak, we'll have 116 buses in the service plan. There will be an ADA accommodation bus at each station, so that's a total of six during hours of operation. We will be having some low-floor transit coaches on the Yellow Line local shuttle. Maybe about half is our target. Hopefully that'll improve the boarding and alighting experience. And then Alexandria Dash will be using traditional transit coaches. And so there will be some low floors and some high floor coaches on that. So the answer will be depends on where and when. All of our Metro buses on Saturdays and Sundays, the Yellow Line shuttle will be all low floor coaches. And so we're doing the best we can with assembling a fleet that will meet the customer experience. And Michael, do you want to address the part?
So as I understood, the question was the rider fee will be waived for parking. We are still currently working through at a parking lot by parking lot basis what is going to be the policy for long-term parking. Van Doren, I believe they're looking at providing a free parking, but that decision is still in progress. In terms of connections from the parking lot to the locations where the shuttle will be, that's an excellent question. Especially in the case of Huntington. Huntington Metro, as many of you may have seen, is a massive station site. People call it the upper level and the lower level, or the south side or the north side. This has been a considerable challenge to think of, because all of these stations will be de-electrified, so you will not be able to pass through the stations. You will not. And so what we're making sure that will happen is that all of our facilities that our staff will use are being pulled out, and that we can manage the flow of the population around these sites. So for Huntington, we're ensuring that the shuttles will go from the south side of the station down to the north side of the station. This will assist persons with disabilities. So if you get dropped off on the upper level and you were to catch the shuttle, you wouldn't need to get on at a specific side to catch the portion that would be the ADA support. The entire service is an ADA support. We have those on the lower level. We have that's where the parking areas are. So again, we have ADA vehicles for where the kiss and ride drop off will be, that can pick people up from the drop off point and be utilized as a paratransit support service. And for our other stations, we've had our ADA specialist come in and conduct a site visit at each site to ensure that where we're placing any temporary facilities have either level platforms as well as accessible entries into the shelters, and that the sidewalk paths connect adequately from facilities such as parking over to the pickup zones for shuttles.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. I'm just taking myself off mute to ask a quick follow-up. I appreciate those answers. I just want to say that when we're speaking about language access, I appreciate you guys being open to consider other languages. I think the District of Columbia they have a Language Access Act, which requires translation services for documents for all government agencies. WMATA is not listed there, but I think that they will be highly interested in accessing languages other than English and Spanish. Even Amharic is only one of many that are required. And again, I know WMATA is not a government agency, but just wanted to put that out there. And I also wanted to confirm, so Huntington, folks can park there during the shutdown and then take the shuttle elsewhere?
That's correct.
Okay, great.
The middle and the north parking decks will continue to be open. Van Doren will continue to have parking. Franconia will be open for business. The non-rider fee will be waived. So if a fee is charged, it'll just be the base fee. And as Michael mentioned, we're looking at possibly reducing the parking fee even lower than that to encourage people to come and utilize those facilities.
Thank you.
Valerie, do you have any questions?
Not at this time. Thank you.
Okay.
So can I suggest a question, Valerie? You didn't ask me when all this begins. And there's a nuance
when does
to
all this begin?
Well, thank you. I appreciate that suggestion. The reason I mention it is that in order for the work to actually begin on the weekend of May 25th, the construction folks are going to have to actually begin to move into position before then. So beginning Sunday, April 14th, we're going to start relocating some of the bus stops and the kiss and ride activities at Braddock and Van Dorn to allow for the setup. During the summer construction, where the bus bay is now at Braddock Road is actually where the crane is going to be, and the materials will be delivered to lift up onto the track right-of-way. So we're moving those bus stops out away from the station area into where the Kiss and Ride is, and that means bumping the Kiss and Ride out to West Street. And the same sort of dominoes at Van Dorn, and there's modifications at Huntington as well. So people will begin to see notifications started last Friday, I think it was, and there'll be information going out. You'll start seeing some of the bus stops and Kiss and Ride displaced, and we'll be working through that leading up to actual construction beginning at the end of May. So.
Okay. No.
Thank you for the opportunity, and
I have
happy
questions
to.
I left myself for last. Okay. My concern is on the shuttle buses. Are we going to be operating on a determined headways, or is it going to be just as soon as it gets full, and then if it doesn't get full, you know, too quick, it's still, you still have to sit there and wait until it gets full, or how is it going to be working?
Well, to prepare for how many buses we need, we build a schedule that is presumed to be operated, and the intent is that during peak hours will be a bus at least every 5 minutes and perhaps more frequently. The operation will actually be more headway based, in that as soon as the line is accommodated, the bus will go. We're not going to hold them back because there will be enough buses in cycle that we'll be able to basically keep buses moving all the time. And as I mentioned, during surge condition, we'll just move them as fast as we can. We won't be holding them back. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Now, I saw that you're increasing some of the regular Metro bus routes service, but not on weekends. Is that for any reason in particular, just thinking that the shuttle buses will take care of it, or
no?
Why are we not?
We're adding capacity to the 10A, the 11Y during weekdays because we anticipate that there will be more riders than what the current service can accommodate. I'm pretty confident on the weekends the 10A continues to operate, that bus, the 10A and 10B together, will be able to accommodate the demand on those lines. On the weekend, we don't have a lot of peak loads on those routes. They tend to have a lot of people ons and offs and not necessarily a big accumulation. That's why you're not seeing an addition to the 10A on the weekends. We are adding extra frequency for the Metroway on the weekends so that it'll be, I believe, every 15 minutes, basically all day on Saturday and Sunday, rather than the wider frequencies that we see now. And yes, the capacity of the shuttle on the weekend should be sufficient to accommodate the rest of the demand.
Hey, Patrick.
Thank you. Quick question, not on this topic at all, but did I remember hearing that there was going to be a week or 2 week shutdown on the red line because of purple? Purple Line War, when was that?
That had been threatened. the gods above blessed us by Purple Line didn't get organized in time, so that opportunity was canceled. Stay tuned. In 2020, there may be more discussions about red line shutdowns associated with the Purple Line crossing our tracks at Silver Spring. But fortunately, we don't have to solve that this summer.
Not this time around. Good. Nice job, Jim. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I did forget one thing, and then actually, I think two people who are both listening in on the live stream, if I'm not mistaken, had brief questions. One was, there's the special platform website, but will the shuttles be included in the regular WMATA.com planner? Two, as part of that, is whether or not those shuttles will be available on Transit app or City Map or things like that. One person wanted to know if the shuttle buses, will use the bus lanes that are available to them in, I guess, the Route 1 busway. And then one person wanted to know why the elevator and escalator replacements at Huntington, which I guess are going on now, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know, are not being coordinated with the rest of this work. And I think Jeff and I touched on that, but.
Yeah, what was the first question?
Whether or not...
It was Google Maps. Okay.
Google Maps or Transit or City Mapper.
Yes, so we are currently in progress of working through all of the, you know, the GTFS feed, basically what goes into building the line layer that is utilized for trip planning on Google. We currently have, you know, we will have it on there. What we are currently working to do is to make sure that the WMATA trip planner, you know, of course, will have that information, that we will have that information on Google and Apple. We're also looking at where notifications can be used, either at a stop level or a line level, that can provide an additional set of information regarding our open API that would be used by our these other various, you know, products like the Transit app. Everything's going to be done through the WMATA stream. In addition to that, we're looking at the information we can provide for estimated time of arrival. That I'll have to provide more updates at a later date.
So the question about the escalators and elevators work being done at Van Dorn, Huntington right now. We are coordinated. Okay, so they're going to finish before this work starts at the shutdown.
Okay, I think the question was why it's all being done during the shutdown. Why there's this additional disruption for the shutdown.
So there's a separate contract that is actually now working on the escalators and right now. And that's not part of this scope of work. Okay. But we do have elevator scope of work in this scope of work. So
I think also the question may be related. You're talking about why we're going to start disrupting things on April 14th?
No, I think it's just why the elevators and escalators not being done during the elevator.
Well, in some stations they are.
There's some that's going to be done, but this work that started now was started before this contract, and it's a separate contract.
So the answer is they didn't need to make it part of this new thing. It already existed. And at Huntington, you're going to see additional construction work over after this because, you know, the south parking area was closed, and that's going to have to be demolished at some time. That could not be done in the time frame we're talking about here, so we push that project off.
Are the shuttles using the bus lane?
Oh, yeah. So there is 0.7 tenths of a mile of bus lane on US 1 in Alexandria utilized by Metroway. The intention is that we will not run the shuttle buses through that busway. Number one is there's no time travel benefit for the shuttles operating where they do and where they're going to spend the time to get into the bus lanes and then to get back out. Number two, the operators that will be running that are not trained for that activity. And number three, we don't want to disrupt the Metroway, which will be operating additional service through that area. We feel that that can serve that community better, and the buses can just stay on the regular lanes and continue because they're going farther north than East Glebe. And that's really where the, if there was a bus lane, that's where it would really be beneficial, but it's not there. So we're just going to keep plowing forward.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm Dan Palmer. I live near Braddock Station. And I actually have a couple of questions because of me trying to get the information what's exactly happening here. Because my couple of my concerns have to do with based off what I looked at with the writer in terms of using the bus lines, is that I'm concerned that the buses are going to be full come Braddock. Is there any dedicated line coming from Braddock?
Well, the Metroway will be starting at Braddock. So if there is a full bus on the shuttle, then you would have an overflow opportunity on that. But the sizing of the demand is such that our buses may have people on them when they come into Braddock Station, but there will be capacity on there to serve your community. So you should not find that the buses come in full and anyway inhibit your ability to get on.
Has there any been any looking at of actually having a dedicated line that actually, and I know some of this could be a dash thing, well, could be something else. But
as part of the original planning, we looked at the demand, where people actually get on and where they're going to, and the demand at Braddock was such that it's better served by taking advantage of the same buses that are coming out of King Street and going on up to Crystal City. So the capacity is provided to accommodate that. I don't, from an operating standpoint, to have multiple turnbacks just gets too complicated to try and explain people. And so we went with the, in this case, the Yellow Line shuttle local that is very simple and has adequate capacity.
But my other concern is the fact that I don't know how many of these routes are going to bypass Braddock Station because of the construction. And the other aspect is not having, say, a more dedicated shuttle that would go over to VRE from Braddock Station rather than going through a tour.
Well, if you wanted to ride down to King Street, then you'd just catch the shuttle going the other direction.
No, I'm talking about going to VRE Station.
Well, VRE stops at King Street.
Yes.
If you're riding into Crystal City, then at the Crystal City terminal, you'll be able to just walk through the underground and go to the VRE station at Crystal City behind the water park.
Yeah, but as I mentioned before, with the shuttle that I know is probably very much underestimated, because I experienced this during the Crystal City airport closure during Veterans Day weekend and saw the long lines that were there of people.
Well, on Friday afternoon, the road network stopped functioning. And without being able to move.
It wasn't the road now. It was beyond, much more beyond that, of lack of communication, the extremely long lines. I waited there over 2 hours.
Oh, I believe you.
And I have video evidence that I could show right here, right now, of that. So if I haven't, I'd be very, very upset if I end up seeing something along those lines. Because if you're saying that a bus is running every 5 minutes and you have – looking at capacity, I'm seeing that you're probably going to have a long wait if you're only running these every 5 minutes during rush hour, given how much load on the – because by the time before you get to Crystal City, the trains are pretty full. Before you get to Crystal City, the capacity is standing room only by that point in time. And just looking at the math of how many seats are in a metro car and doing the math, that tells me that there's going to be multiple bus waits before somebody can get onto the next bus.
That will not be the experience. I have done that calculation. The trains are not full coming into King Street or Braddock, and so you can't use the capacity of the whole train. You look at the demand that's the passengers that are actually on there. And
I'm looking at my first experience for all of the train.
Sorry,
and I'm not trying to deny your experience, but the road network in that area is quite constrained. The experience on Friday afternoon of Veterans, where we had rain, we had traffic accidents, we had the national airport congestion, and literally gridlock occurred. You can't operate on streets if you can't move, and that's why those lines started up. We called for additional resources. We were able to clear out Pentagon City and get everybody home before 8 o'clock that evening. I apologize that you had that experience, but we're using that the lessons learned from that to make sure, for example, that's why the Yellow Line shuttle is not going through National Airport, so that we're not caught up in the traffic congestion that's related to their ongoing construction project. We're offering an alternative at National Airport so that if anything does happen on US 1, we're ready, set to be able to utilize the parkway and vice versa. Can't prohibit all things. The railroad is unique in having its own right-of-way and the ability to get through whatever happens in Northern Virginia traffic conditions. But we've tried to build in enough resiliency and enough capacity to provide a better response than what we had available on that Friday. So thank you very much, and no, we don't need more.
Yeah. Lorraine, I'm not sure I can hear you.
Okay, what I'm saying is that if anybody has additional questions, we can email them to John and he will forward them to them.
Sure.
So if there anything else comes up, you will be hearing from us, you know.
I look forward to it. Email. Thank you very much for your time
Thank
and
you.
Your questions.
Thank you. Okay, so we continue now with the bus transformation project update. And who's going to give that to us? Do we have a volunteer? No. No volunteer.
Okay.
So you have the floor.
I have the floor for the night. Oh, no. All right, so to I guess summarize what has happened so far is really coming down to a lot of confusion, because there's a lot of entities involved and they're trying to come up with this plan that of course is regional, and because we've got so many regional factions, it's hard to say that, all right, we're going to make this large cohesive, you know, plan work. Because we've got, you know, different fare structures, different scheduling. And so they're trying to make a lot of things work, whereas maybe like one overhead body, perhaps, you know, WMATA being center of the system, be the lead, but everybody pull in. And so it's very hard for us to look at it and say that, yes, we've got this one solid plan that's going to move forward. There was some pushback on some of the planning. We are more or less a middleman part of this process, because this the initial strategic planners, they had already put a lot of this together. They're taking information from us and from other sources to blend them into this particular plan. We've had the three initial meetings, and so now they're going to go back to those planners, toss all this information in, and then come back to us again. So I believe she said it was probably going to be around May 1st, they're going to re-present to us again, so we'll be able to move forward with it. But again, there was, you know, some people that looked at this entire plan is just not being doable at all. So we'll have to see what's going to come from this. But it was very interesting just to hear all of the back and forth, push, take, and you know, it's.
So it's a lot of wishful thinking.
You could say that. I think that everybody agreed that a lot of what was being presented made some sense, but if anything, instead of starting on such a high platform, start lower and then build up and then start adding components to it, because it's just too much. I mean, it's so overreaching, and you know, we were looking at system maps, and you know, when you've got taking Northern Virginia and account, you've got so many different bus operators. And, you know, they've got their own mapping. They've got their own fare structures. You know, some have plans for low income or just seniors, you know, and all of the systems don't have that, you know, coming back over to Maryland system, WMATA. So trying to pull all of those pieces together and see what makes sense to, you know, making one plan, it's not going to be easy. So, you know, we even had people that were from the various districts that were there saying that, well, they thought that they liked their plan and they thought it should stay the way it is because it worked for them. But again, trying to move some of that over to, say, even, you know, Metro as the base, that's probably not going to be so easy. So again, it's really going to just come down to see what's going to happen next once we hear back from these strategic planners. So hopefully they pull something together, but if they do anything, it's going to be small to start and then, like I said, stair stack it and build up to it. So, yes, yeah, so nothing really happened.
So can I speak? Yeah, this is Pat. I just wanted to add something because we've got three people, I think, from AAC on the Bus Transformation Project. What I heard was that there was going to be a preliminary report as of May 6th,
right,
which we wanted to get access to. So I'm not quite sure what's going to be in those recommendations. So two dates that I've heard are May 6th and also I don't know how much final recommendations sometime in September. Is that what you're hearing?
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, we were not given really materials to take and review. Everything was basically a slideshow presentation. So, you know, we couldn't even take anything home. If it was on the screen, you had to write it down real quick before the next slide came across, because that was the only way you're going to take anything away from that. But yes, Patrick's right that May 6th is the date that we're looking at, you know, for some more information to come back towards us. The September date, I don't remember, but it probably was presented. And I forgot the gentleman's name that was there representing the AAC.
Phil Posner, I think.
Okay, yes, yeah. Phil, right.
Yeah.
And so Phil voiced his opinions as well. So it was very well attended and electrifying.
And long, I'm assuming.
Well, no, actually each meeting was only 2 hours, but because they had, I would say half of the session was presentation and the other half was discussion, the 2 hours went by really fast. So, and we met at different locations. So, the last one was out here in Bethesda, and one was in Clarendon. The first one was in Clarendon, and the second was here. So we've been, you know, all across the region with meetings, but which, you know, didn't matter. But it was just very short and fast firing. So we'll see what comes from this.
Okay, so we're up to date, and you'll keep us informed of what comes.
Absolutely, as much as I can get out of. No, you can take notes, which, I mean, I took notes, but which I've actually got to go back over my notes because, you know, I had to just scrabble a lot of stuff as I'm, you know, trying to capture the screens. And I mean, sometimes we were able to get them to go back on the screen if we needed to capture something. But yeah, it was, they were very, very tight on time. So that's why they had to move things through. And again, because they didn't want our sessions to be anything more than promoting ideas to them. They didn't want us to have anything to take back and, you know, start doing any type of strategizing with it. So whatever we had at that moment is what we had. That was it.
Just make it doable.
Right, make it doable.
It looks like the presentations from the February meetings are posted on the website.
Okay. So next, we're going to elect our new leadership for the year. I haven't seen anybody saying if anybody is interested in being a candidate for any office. So if anybody wants to nominate, first we have to, with the change in our bylaws, we are going to be selecting our chair first, and then depending on where our chair is from, then we'll select our two vice chairs so that the three jurisdictions are represented. So anybody wants to be chair? Interested, or does anybody want to nominate anybody to be chair? Yes, you can. The at-large members are able to be in the leadership, so you can be chair or vice chair, but then at that point, then you would be also representing wherever your residence, you know, your residence at. Well, first of all, we generally do voice vote, but if we don't have anybody, I would like to nominate Colin for chair.
This is Valerie, and I think that's a great idea. I would like to also support nominating Colin for chair.
Okay, so we got a second on that.
Does Colin accept the nomination?
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, I really do appreciate your vote of confidence. I just don't know that my schedule would allow me to, you know, meaningfully carry out those duties, especially, you know, attending and reporting at a lot of board meetings. I don't do that anymore.
You would just have to.
Just run the meetings.
You prepare the report, but that's about it.
All right.
And John, exactly. John will assist with that.
All right, then. So
so it would be more
a reduced effort.
Agenda and that kind of stuff, right?
And I apologize that I did not reach out to you in advance and talk to you about this. I think you'll be a wonderful nominee, but I also understand your, you know, don't have unlimited amount of time. Are you saying that you might consider doing this?
Yeah, you know, I'm happy to sort of, you know, serve in the capacity to run meetings and help develop reports, but, you know.
That's about it. If I saw the bylaws as amended correctly, that's basically what the chair will be doing. And then working in conjunction with staff and I guess with Chris also.
This is Rebecca. I also was planning to nominate Clarence. I don't know if he's there.
He is.
I warned him about it.
I warned him. Oh. Okay.
Clarence, are you?
No, I appreciate the nomination. Unfortunately, my bandwidth with other civic engagement is just too wide right now, and I would also vote for Colin chair. So thank you so much. Why am I staring up at the sky as if that's where you are? Thank you so much, but I cannot accept.
So the motion, what motion? Well, are we ready to vote?
I would like to make a motion that we vote for the chair, since Colin is running unopposed, unless I heard otherwise.
No, wait, Andrew. Andrew has.
I was going to nominate Lorraine.
Oh, okay. I appreciate that, but actually, I have decided that this is going to be my last year. This is my 10th year on the rack, and I think that I'm going to end it in December. So that leave part of the tenure open. So I really cannot accept that I'm ending my participation with the RAC in December. So thank you. But so we're going back then to Colin being our candidate and running on a post.
doesn't sound like I have much of a choice here.
That's how I was selected by chair, by the way. Okay,
Colin,
so let's have a vote.
It.
Let's have a vote. Yeah. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. And, okay, anybody opposed? Any abstentions? So, unanimously, Colin has been selected as our new RAC chair. Congratulations.
Well, there are going to be some changes around here.
Now, Colin being a resident of the district, correct? So that means we have to select a Maryland vice chair and a Virginia vice chair. Now, Maryland vice chair, that brings it down to Will, Yvette, and Rebecca, correct? So these are our choices for Maryland vice chair. Who wants to be vice chair? Rebecca?
Yeah.
Rebecca?
I think I have a candidate over here.
Mm-hmm.
Will,
yes, Patrick?
Will said he'll do it.
Okay.
I twisted its
Yay.
Arm.
Okay, so we
Yay.
Have... Okay. So, okay, and it's been seconded. So, all in favor of Will being our Maryland vice chair? Say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody opposed?
Ooh, no.
Abstentions? So, unanimously, Will is our Maryland vice chair. And then the Virginia vice chair, that is just Andrew and myself. And as I stated, I will be, exactly. So that sort of leaves Andrew.
I'm coming down with something. Lorraine, I thought you were going to do it for another year, but...
Well, no, this is the thing is that as I was checking the bylaws, the terms run until December,
right.
But office runs until April. In
right.
April, we do the election, so I wouldn't be here January, February, and March, so we would have to... I could be vice chair until December, and then you take over in January, February, and March.
Not be vice chair, I would love to be vice chair. I would like to be vice chair. Whatever you like.
I can do it till December. As I said, my concern was that my decision is that I'm not going to be, I don't want to be reappointed to the RAC. So I will be, I don't mind being vice chair until December, and then you take over in January.
I would make a motion that we vote for Andrew to be the vice chair now so that we can have some transition support from Lorraine.
Okay.
That's an excellent idea.
Okay. Okay, so all in favor of Andrew?
Aye.
Or, Virginia vice chair, say aye.
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 Okay, opposed? Abstentions? No. Okay. So we have our new leadership. Colin is our new chair, and our Maryland vice chair is Will, and our Virginia vice chair is Andrew.
Yay, congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you.
No, she is a member. As she explained to me, she will be a member. She continues being a member, but she just, her work schedule really doesn't allow her to continue being chair. Correct. From 21, we used to be 21. We're now 11. And now it's 2 per jurisdiction and then the rest at large. But the at large people can still be members of the leadership, but it would be considered as a representing whatever your place of residence is. The only person that the AAC representative is not eligible for to run for chair. So, so that's the way I understood the bylaws. Okay.
No,
that's fine.
You are correct. No, you are correct on that.
So I think that we have followed our bylaws. Now, as far as whether we want to do committee work, I don't know. Are we not going to do that anymore? So that's about it. Okay. So since we have finished our elections, any announcements? Okay, John has announcements.
Two quick announcements. One is Mr. Dorsey asked that he would encourage RAC members following the Blue Yellow Line presentation, he would encourage you to consider how you could assist in or amplify the communications efforts that are going to be undertaken for the shutdown. That's thing one. Thing two is that on April 28th, very early in the morning, Metro will be conducting an emergency drill at the Friendship Heights station. I wanted to let you know about your eligibility to participate. I will email you something. I think it entails being at Friendship Heights at like 6:30 on Sunday morning. But if you want to be evacuated, it'll last. I think it goes from about 8 to 1. But if you'd like to be evacuated off a train, this is your chance. You will need to.
It is an experience, I have to say.
You'll need to sign a liability waiver with WMATA, and you'll get information. But I will email you that information.
Okay, so that's.
Please send me that information.
You'll get it all via email, but I just wanted to give you all a heads up now.
April 28th at Friendship Heights.
Yes.
Which exit?
I don't know. You'll get it via email.
Okay.
So, and it'll include basically you have to register. So
yeah,
there'll be a registration form that'll get you the information, and then they'll email you information as it goes forward. But that's all I got.
Okay. Any other announcements?
There was a question. Someone was wondering about, what role the chair played in the creation of the report to the board. There was any report, so I'll give it to John, or how that worked. How the reports are written.
The report is written by, generally speaking, the report has generally been written by the chair, mm-hmm. or in the absence, in her absence. His absence. Sometimes then John will prepare it out of the recording, and that's how it's done.
Oh.
Okay. It used to be when we had committee work that, you know, all that stuff would be reported to the board, and the chair would have to go to the board meetings to do the presentations, but that doesn't happen anymore because now that is done through our contact, which is Christian Dorsey.
Historically, the chair has prepared the reports to the board. I think John largely synthesized our comments from our email thread and the last meeting. I guess the question was in reference to the sort of recommendations on the budget for both, right?
I think so. I think there was more questions about this time.
From my perspective, I'll say it's however the chair wants to do it. I understand this is a volunteer position, so if you're able to write the report and want to, great. If you're not, they pay me to be here. They pay me to staff here, so I'm happy to do it as well. You know, I put together the letter and the budget because nothing is forthcoming the day before the finance committee, so ta-da. But I don't think there's a rigid or ideological problem.
I use Google Docs.
Okay, Docker.
Okay. Any other announcements, or are we sort of done now? Any new business? No?
I move we adjourn.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Meeting adjourned.